Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. If up the black police, that 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Up coins held pro.
Show.
They got me started, lion hearted. I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Guzu Saba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity is so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit's gonna be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth a crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fuck me promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movement for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here. Up coins hell pro.
RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, cause that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit that don't tolerate it, melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack upped up another conversation, Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
We are joined today by Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who is a senior research scientist at the MIT Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Now, she has a Bachelor of Science degree in biophysics, a master's and a PhD in electrical engineering and computer science, all from MIT, so certainly an expert in the things that she's going to be discussing with us today. Dr. Seneff, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Delighted to be here.
Yes, we're looking forward to everything that you've been researching during this time. So before we get into that, please just give us a brief history of your career and what led you to start looking more into these particular topics.
Okay, well, my career has been mostly in the area of computer science, electrical engineering, developing conversational interfaces with computers, precursors to Amazon Echo and the Siri, iPhone Siri. And I switched over to biology in probably 2008, 2007, started looking at correlations between toxic environmental chemicals and disease. I was interested in the autism epidemic, and I really wanted to understand what was causing it. In the United States, autism rates were continually going up every year. Oh, we're just diagnosing it more. I mean, there were always excuses, but I thought it was definitely something in the environment that was causing it. And I actually eventually came upon glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, and I actually have this book here, which I wrote. This was published in May of this year, June of this year, Toxic Legacy, How the Weed Killer Glyphosate is Destroying Our Health and the Environment. And I fully believe that glyphosate is a major player in all the health issues that we have in the United States and around the world, but the United States is the heaviest user of glyphosate in the world. And all these diseases that are correlated with bad outcomes from COVID-19, many of them are also correlated with a rise in glyphosate usage. So I believe that glyphosate is causing the countries that use a lot of it to have a harder time with COVID-19, people getting more serious cases of the disease. I got into the vaccine issue really before, you know, when they started talking about the emergency and these novel vaccines are going to come out with record speed, warp speed type of thing. Back in late 2020, you know, towards the end of this thing, of that year, they rushed it through to market, and it was a technology that was extremely novel, had never been used before. And I felt really worried about that because I knew that that degree of sophistication in the technology would normally take 12 years to get to market, and it would normally only 2% of the products that were tried would actually make it to market. So it felt like this was just really crazy. And I just wanted to, I did a deep dive into the messenger RNA vaccines, learned everything I could about the technology, and then watched the symptoms and did a lot of studying of the various vaccine adverse event reporting system to try to understand the disease process. I always like to ask why is something happening. And so with these vaccines, I believe there was a tremendous list of extraordinary adverse reactions that are happening that one struggles to explain. And so I really wanted to get to the bottom of how could these, just like how could glyphosate be so toxic, how could these vaccines be so toxic? It's sort of the same problem all over again, but with a different toxic element.
And through your research, what problems have you found with the mRNA technology that could be contributing to these problems?
Many things. And it's mostly that it's a sophisticated technology. I'll give them credit for that. And they were very single-minded on making sure that. It's the messenger RNA is the RNA sequence that codes for the protein for spike. That's what is in the vaccine. Lots and lots of these RNA molecules packaged up in a lipid particle that has other things added to it, like polyethylene glycol. And a cationic lipid, a synthetic cationic lipid, which is also probably very toxic. And they've sort of designed it to look like an LDL particle, which is a lipid particle that's commonly in the blood, and that all cells know how to take up. So it's going to, you know, really get into cells very easily. And then they've designed it so it opens up and very nicely releases RNA and immediately starts making protein, makes it fast, and it makes it efficiently, and it doesn't break down. They've done a very good job of keeping the RNA intact, resistant against the normal enzymes that would normally tear it apart. So usually if you just inject an RNA into your body, you have enzymes that would immediately break it apart. So they were very concerned about not letting that happen. So they had to go into a lot of effort in different ways to design it to make that true. They also basically redesigned the RNA itself, first of all, to look like a human RNA molecule rather than the viral ones. The cell does not realize it's being invaded because it looks like a human molecule. And then on top of that, they replaced all the uridines with methyl pseudouridine. Uridine is one of the four nucleotides that go into the sequence, very common in the sequence. And every one of them got replaced with this alternative methyl pseudouridine, which they discovered really keeps it from getting broken down. So that's also extremely unnormal. They also changed the code from the original one from the virus. They first of all actually changed what the protein is because they put in these two prolines in the middle of the sequence that actually keeps the protein stuck to the H2 receptor and keeps it from refolding and going into the membrane. So this ends up disabling the H2 receptors that bind to it, which is a very bad problem because when H2 receptors get disabled, you've got lots of diseases going on there. And then the RNA itself is also changed from the original RNA that's in the virus. And in this case, they did what's called codon optimization. It's quite interesting because the code is redundant. There's 64 patterns. There's four things taken three ways. You know, the RNA, the code is basically this famous DNA Watson-Crick code. And you have 64 different codes, but only about 21 different amino acids. The codes are coded for specific amino acids. So the code is redundant. And it turns out that different versions of the code have different degrees of efficiency in terms of making protein. So what they did with codon optimization is actually choose a more productive code for each amino acid as much as they could in order to get the protein to get the RNA to make protein very, very efficiently, very, very fast. And that's very problematic too, because the cell is there making protein. They put on things on the end. This is called UTRs, untranslated regions, on both ends that are selected from human proteins that are known to be protected against, the RNA is protected against being broken down. So they've done all these things, everything they can think of to make sure that it's sturdy, it sticks around, it doesn't degrade, and it keeps on making protein, because usually there's a tremendously complicated regulatory process. Normally to make a protein, you start with the DNA, you copy it into RNA, goes into the cytoplasm, starts making protein. And then you have all these different regulatory factors that will both stop it from making protein and start chewing on its end to break it apart. So that usually RNA only lasts a short while, but it's been shown in recent studies that they looked at the lymph nodes from people who got vaccinated after the vaccine going all the way up to 60 days. And they found both the message RNA and the spike protein in the lymph node 60 days later, which is really, really shocking to me that it could stick around for 60 days. That feels completely abnormal.
And is it possible that it was created to purposely do this?
Absolutely. Their whole goal is to get tremendous antibody response. And I will say they succeeded very, very well. Because what happens is that, so you inject it in the muscle. First of all, you're injecting it past the barriers. That's another important point, because the virus gets you infected through the nose, gets into the lungs. If you have a strong immune system, it'll stay in the lungs. It won't go beyond that. If people who don't have a strong immune system, it gets past the lung barrier into the blood and then past the vascular barrier into the tissues. And that's how you can get things like long-haul COVID with the brain problems. It's all these barriers have to be crossed. And then the spike protein actually is neurotoxic. And so it's been shown in studies that the spike protein itself, by itself, not just the virus, and they even think that that's the spike protein is the part that sticks around and causes long-haul COVID. But with long-haul COVID, you still got lots of symptoms months later after you caught the disease. And you no longer have a viral infection, but you do still have that spike protein. It can stick around for 15 months in certain immune cell types. They found that out in research as well. And that's going to happen with the vaccine as well. But the vaccine is totally focused on just the spike protein, not the whole virus, only the spike protein, which has limitations in terms of the immune response that it induces, because it's only spike. And they wanted to make as strong an antibody response as they possibly could. And they did all these tests to make sure it wouldn't break down, make protein really fast, also be able to infect the immune cells themselves. Because the dendritic cells come into the muscle in response to this, you know, crying for help. The muscle cells are busy taking up nucleotides and making spike protein, and they're screaming for help. The immune cells come in. They start taking up the virus, the vaccine particles as well. They don't have the ACE2 receptor. The dendritic cells are protected from infection from the virus, but not from the vaccine. So they start making spike protein too, and then they're like really struggling, what am I going to do with this? They go into the lymph system from that point, into these lymph nodes. You get these swollen lymph nodes under the arm. It's a common side effect of these vaccines. And then they travel through the lymph system to the spleen. They travel to many organs, the ovaries, the spleen, the liver, the bone marrow even. They're getting to all these places through the lymph system. In a study that actually traced where does the RNA go, they found among the organs, they found the highest level in the spleen. And then among women, they found second highest level in the ovaries, which is very problematic for pregnancy.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, there have been studies that have come out now that have spoken about the amount of women that are miscarrying, the risks of miscarrying and other reproductive problems, women, you know, having their period constantly. It's causing a lot of disruptions in the menstrual cycle, which is a clear indication that there's a problem in the ovaries. Now,
absolutely, absolutely the case. And I want to say there's a study on mice where they actually, they took the antibodies. So the vaccine induces extremely high antibodies, and particularly the balance of the antibodies types is very different from the virus. And that's partly because it's not infecting the mucosal barriers. So it's producing, instead of producing mucosal antibodies, it's producing IgG, immunoglobulin G. And that is a particular type of antibody that is known to cause things like thrombosis, blood clots. And also there was an experiment where they took these IgG antibodies produced from the spike protein, and they injected them into the peritoneum, that's the part lining the gut of the mice, the pregnant mice. And the what they found was the actual baby mice that were born, the pups had severe problems with inflammation in the brain. They were basically picking up that spike protein and becoming poisoned by it. They were severely damaged by it.
And inflammation can lead to many different health problems. And we know that
yes.
You're talking about the lymph nodes. Is this mm-hmm. potentially why we're seeing such a huge increase in cancer? I mean, recently we had that DOD data come out, 300% increase in cancer in the U.S. military. Is this potentially why?
I absolutely think so. And in fact, I've written papers where we've discussed this possibility that they would accelerate the rate of cancer. And I think anybody who has cancer and then gets this vaccine is looking for a return of any kind of latent cancer is going to recur. As a consequence, I think in many cases that's going to happen. In fact, I've looked in the various database and there's lots of signals. Breast cancer in particular is very interesting. That's, of course, right here, the lymph nodes. You're getting that directly from the vaccine. But those swollen lymph nodes are an indicator. Normally you would go in and get a test for breast cancer if you had those swollen lymph nodes. Now they're saying, oh, well, it's just a vaccine. Don't worry about it. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's also connected to cancer, right? And there was a study on the spike protein that showed, first of all, that it gets into the nucleus of cells. And secondly, in the nucleus, it suppresses a protein called BRCA, B-R-C-A, which is a famous, BRCA2, I think it's called, a famous protein associated. It's the strongest, you know, genetic mutation linked to breast cancer. And with a mutation, you have a suppressed protein. This spike protein does that too. It suppresses BRCA. So that's going to cause breast cancer. And we're seeing, and I looked at the various database, and there's a very strong signal for breast cancer in particular, but there were many different cancers and things like malignancy and all of these. The VAERS database, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, put out by the United States, is quite fun to rummage through, and I've been doing a lot of looking in it. The numbers are astonishing as far as the what I'm looking at. I take the year 2021, and then I go find all the cases of, say, breast cancer linked with COVID-19 vaccines. And then I go find all the cases of that breast cancer linked with any vaccine over the period 2021, the flu shot, the MMR vaccine, all the different vaccines, and look at the ratio of those two. And I am finding a huge list of symptoms of different severe problems where the numbers come out like 98%, 99%, 97%, all in sort of high 90s of the total percentage of the cases in 2021 that are COVID-19 vaccines, compared to all the others. And when I looked at, I actually looked at a sort of comparison of how many shots. Of course, there were a lot of COVID-19 vaccines administered, so they're going to be high anyway. But if you just do it normalized for flu, so what I did was I saw 52% of the population got the flu shot. That's very popular in this country. And then I worked out exactly what percentage would be getting the COVID shots. And you've got the three shots, you know, you've got the boosters. So some got three, some got two, some got one. You can tally all of that up. And you find that it's about three times the number. So you expect the COVID-19 vaccine to have three times as many adverse reactions as flu, if everything else was equal. But it's way, way more than that. It's like 25 or 27 times as many reports for COVID-19 compared to flu. And, of course, if you were to take this full population of all the vaccines and what percentage would be expected to be COVID, everything else being equal, it would be a third, 33%, but instead it's like 97, 98. It's way, way out of line for a huge list of problems. Thrombosis, heart problems, neurodegenerative diseases, just all kinds of things are way out of line compared to the other vaccines.
So you've been speaking about exosomes. How does they tie in, and forgive my ignorance, I'm not an expert on this topic, how does all of that tie in together?
Very fascinating. Actually, I was quite thrilled when I started to figure out about the exosomes. And I have actually had an interest in Parkinson's disease because my mother died from it. So I've been studying Parkinson's, and I'm quite aware of how it proceeds. It takes usually decades to get from the point where you've got initial evidence of something going on to the point where you actually get symptoms, the slow process. But it often starts with a prion-like protein in the gut by a pathogen. A pathogen is producing a certain protein that's called a prion-like protein. These proteins are really, really fascinating. They're proteins that can cause other proteins to misfold, to fold in the wrong way, and then to sort of precipitate out as these fibrils, and sort of you have like the Alzheimer's plaque. You know, Parkinson's is associated with alpha-synuclein, which also forms these, you know, Lewy bodies, these plaque-like elements that show up in the brain at the substantia nigra, which is the place where Parkinson's develops. You could see that, you know, under the microscope. And what they found was that when you get a pathogen infection and the immune cells take up the protein from the pathogen and they carry it into the spleen, and in the spleen, they sort of induce inflammation and they induce the stress response. And that stress response causes these immune cells to produce more of this alpha-synuclein. It's actually a defense against infections, against any kind of stress. Alpha-synuclein gets increased. And so they've got all this alpha-synuclein. They're trying to cope with this infection. And what they'll do is they'll package up the alpha-synuclein along with this protein that's causing trouble and release it out into the circulation in the form of these little nanoparticles that are called exosomes. The exosomes are really, really fascinating because they contain all kinds of stuff in there. They can contain even the entire messenger RNA of the vaccine. That's been shown, the whole messenger RNA, not just the protein itself. And they display the protein, so the spike protein. The spike protein is a prion-like protein. That's been shown in peer-reviewed papers. And so I think it's causing, so the immune cells are going to the spleen, and there are these germinal centers. They're called germinal centers, both in the spleen and in the lymph nodes. That's the place where you want the action to happen in order to make those antibodies. And so the people who were doing the mRNA research were quite delighted to see that the immune cells were carrying the mRNA into these germinal centers. And that's where this dance goes on between the dendritic cells, the B cells, the T cells. They actually, it's pretty cool. The dendritic cells inform the B cells. They show the B cells and the T cells, hey, there's this protein. You need to design these antibodies to perfectly match it. And they get to work and they produce these extremely specific, you know, laser accurate antibodies against that particular protein, namely the spike protein. And they found experimentally that the vaccine induces a tremendously high antibody response. It's actually more typical of a severe disease. If you get a very mild case of COVID, sometimes your body doesn't even make any antibodies to spike. It's not necessary. And so it doesn't bother. It's only when it starts to get out of control, like the virus, you know, is getting past the barriers and into the circulation, and then you get this antibody response as a protective mechanism because your innate immune system is weak. But in the case of the vaccine, even if your innate immune system is not weak, you've still already gotten past the barriers, and the immune cells carry it into those germinal centers right away. So you're just basically skipping all those early steps of the disease and going straight to severe disease, acting like it's severe disease. And the immune cells make tons of this spike protein, package it up into these exosomes in the spleen, in those germinal centers, release them into the circulation, and those exosomes travel very, very well along nerve fibers. This is the critical thing that I am really nervous about because a little bit of a pun there, sorry, but the exosomes are traveling along the nerve fiber, so they go down the splanchnic nerve and they get into the center, and then they go down they get onto the vagus nerve, and then they travel from along the vagus nerve is like the wandering nerve. The vagus is wandering, and it just goes, you know, to the lungs, to the heart, to the gut, to the brain, and it goes straight up into this medulla oblongata, which is the center of the brain's control. It's the control center for the body. It controls breathing, it controls heart rate, it controls consciousness. So we're getting symptoms like loss of consciousness, arrhythmias, tremendous tachycardia is something like 99% of the VAERS. Lots and lots of cases of tachycardia, which is an arrhythmia in the heart. And of course, then the brain, you've got migraine, headaches. I mean, it's going and infecting, the vaccine is infecting all these nerves in the head, tinnitus from the ringing of the ear, very common symptom from the auditory nerve, And then you've got throat problems, you can't swallow, there's swallowing issues, that's because of the vagus nerve. You've got the facial nerve causing facial palsy, Bell's palsy. Yeah. You've got the trigeminal nerve, which is going to cause a migraine headache. Huge numbers of people are getting migraine headache. All these things are evidence that the vaccine is making its way to the brain, affecting specifically the nerves. And then the medulla oblongata, that's going to cause things like, you know, sudden death, cardiac arrest, or you can't breathe, you know. So we have a lot of symptoms of syncope, which is, you know, a loss of consciousness. You have a shortness of breath. There's huge numbers of cases of these conditions. And then, of course, the arrhythmias, all of those things are indicators of inflammation in the vagus nerve and the associated nerves that it hooks up to.
Is there a possibility that some of these things will come out later, that we won't actually see the full extent of all of these, you know, effects on the nerves and these exercises going to the spleen and causing inflammation? I'm trying to absorb the science here.
Well, when you say later, do you mean that someone might get the vaccine and be fine and then sometime later develop some kind
Correct.
Of symptom, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I suspect so. I mean, I don't know. I think it's certainly, if you do have a bad reaction right away after the vaccine, that's very worrisome. Whether you could have no noticeable problem with the vaccine, but then later on develop something like your cancer could return, I actually don't know the answer. Whether you pretty much have to have those immediate, some kind of like migraine headache or something immediately after to be then followed by these other problems, I don't know. But it is, so that's a good question to know for sure. We'd like to know that, whether if you didn't have a bad reaction, you're going to be okay. I think in part it depends on how healthy your immune system is and how capable it is of removing spike protein, because that's the thing that, and removing that messenger RNA. You know,
so there's actually a way to remove the spike protein?
You can break it down. It's just a protein, right? You should be able to just metabolize it. That's what we do with proteins. When they misfold, we just clear them. They go through the lysosomal process. Immune cells actually are responsible for removing these misfolded proteins that are accumulating in the Alzheimer's brain. And part of the reason why they're accumulating is because the immune cells are sick. And I will tell you, glyphosate causes the immune cells to be sick. And that's one thing I have in my book. I have a whole chapter on glyphosate and the immune system, specifically the innate immune system, which is the one that clears up the garbage when you have these misfolded proteins. So I think that if you've been exposed, for example, to glyphosate, you're going to have a harder time both with the disease and with the vaccines. The vaccines are going to be more harmful to you than they would be to someone who has a healthier immune system. And glyphosate is just one example. There's several different toxins in the environment that will disrupt your immune system and make it weak.
Does that mean that people could potentially detox? We hear a lot about detoxing. Could they potentially detox from the effects of the vaccines and the amount of spike proteins that have just been produced in their bodies?
Definitely. I mean, I think the way to deal with these symptoms is a lot like long-haul COVID. And actually, I want to say long-haul COVID has been connected now to, there's a paper that showed this whole idea of this vagus nerve as a centerpiece of long-haul COVID, that the virus is traveling along the vagus nerve. And it could actually be exosomes containing spike protein, the same thing, because it's only spike protein that's left with long-haul COVID, and it's making its way to the brain. It's actually the same mechanism that the vaccine does it, except the vaccine does it more efficiently because we're getting past those barriers from the get-go. But if you've got, if you're taking cancer, you're taking... often cancer patients are taking immune-suppressing therapy, so they're going to be particularly susceptible, I think, to damage from the vaccine because their immune system is not strong. In order to boost your immune system, I generally recommend, you know, several things, but probably number one for me is to eat a certified organic whole foods diet. That's to avoid the glyphosate and all the other chemicals that are in the toxic food. Number two is to get a lot of sunlight exposure to the skin and to the eyes. Get out in the sun as much as you can, because the sun is very healing. It actually helps your body to produce, of course, vitamin D, but also sulfate, to make sulfate, to attach it to vitamin D and to attach it to cholesterol in order to distribute both cholesterol and sulfate to the body. And both of those are extremely important for the being healthy in terms of both the mitochondrial health and the lysosomes to be able to clear the cellular debris. Many of these neurodegenerative diseases and many other diseases have a basis in dysfunctional mitochondria. Those are the organelles in the cells that make the ATP, and or dysfunctional lysosomes, which are the ones that clear the debris. And when those two systems are broken, you're very susceptible to any kind of toxic exposures because your body isn't able to clear away proteins that have misfolded. And that's a critical thing with these spike proteins, because they're going to be triggering that alpha-synuclein to also misfold. They always help along. They help the other proteins that have this misfolding problem to get into that misfolded state.
And you've also spoken about shedding. So initially we weren't sure whether shedding was actually possible, but now we're saying that it is actually definitely the case that some people who are unvaccinated are experiencing side effects or symptoms from being around those who are vaccinated. How does that actually happen?
Yeah, now that was something that fascinated me as soon as I heard about it. And at first, of course, I was skeptical. You have to be skeptical of all these things you hear on the web. There's a lot of stuff going around that may be questionable as far as, you know, whether it's true or not. It's very hard to figure out what's true these days because there's so many different information sources that are saying different things, contradictory things in many cases. But when I wrote a paper together with Dr. Greg Nye that was published, a peer-reviewed paper published last May. I have a title here. It was called Worse Than the Disease, Some Possible Unintended Consequences of the mRNA Vaccines Against COVID-19. That paper is long, has many, many references, and we have several different sections in there. We have a big section on Parkinson's and prion diseases and exosomes and all of that. But we also have a section on this, and in that section, I guess, is where we mention the possibility that that this exposure, secondhand exposure to the vaccine, could be caused by these exosomes, because the exosomes, they go everywhere in your body. It's been shown in studies that exosomes are released when you cough up, you know, phlegm from them. If you have a cold or something, exosomes come out of your breath. They probably, you know, come out through your skin. They're probably in the breast milk when the mother's nursing her baby. You know, I would be very surprised if they're not. Exosomes are being released. They're just these tiny little nanoparticles. Anytime you're excreting things, you're probably excreting exosomes. So it feels like you could get it through the skin or through the, you know, just the air, it coming out into the air and somebody else is breathing it in. And they could contain the entire messenger RNA. That's the really amazing thing. I found a study that actually said that the entire messenger RNA of the spike protein was being released in exosomes intact from cells that were exposed to the messenger RNA. So that's really, really quite remarkable, because now you've got, if someone picks up the exosome that has the actual mRNA molecule, that's not just a spike protein. That's a molecule that can stick around for at least 60 days and keep on making spike protein that whole time. So they could get, you know, not a dose anywhere like what the vaccinated person is getting, but they could get enough to cause symptoms, I would think, through that process.
And similarly to the vaccinated person, there is something that they could do to reduce the amount of that in their system, right?
Right. And I did say organic diet, sunlight, but also eating a nutrient-dense whole foods diet, particularly concentrating on sulfur. I really am a big fan of sulfur. If you've looked at my research, it's been an area of interest for me for many, many years. And so eating sulfur-rich foods, and those are fun foods. I mean, there's onions and garlic. And cruciferous vegetables, you know, like broccoli.
Did you just call them fun foods?
I find them delightful, but maybe I'm weird.
Fun foods, okay. Go on, sorry.
And also organic eggs is a really good food because they're very rich in micronutrients, grass-fed beef. Seafood is very healthy, lots of minerals and vitamins. You're looking for foods that have, and even colorful fruits and vegetables, because they have a lot of polyphenols and flavonoids. Those are, all these things are useful to maintain a healthy body and a healthy immune system. When you eat, you know, soy protein bars that are loaded with glyphosate, you're not feeding your body well, and you're going to get sick, you know.
Dr. Seneff, you've figured out that this technology is potentially very dangerous. The data is out there. We're also now saying that it is actually very, possible that people that have cancer or are in remission, those who are immunocompromised, having these vaccines would be worse for them. Yet the health experts on our televisions and online, they're telling us that, you know, specifically those who are immunocompromised should go now for a fourth booster. That's what Fauci's saying.
That's terrible. I think it's actually really bad advice, and not just because that person's not really going to be able to use those antibodies appropriately, but because that's going to be a driver for mutations to emerge in the virus itself. And that's another thing we wrote about in the paper that I mentioned. We had a section of describing a particular case study of a patient in the UK who had cancer, was being treated with immunosuppression therapy, got COVID-19, ended up in the hospital. And he was in the hospital for 101 days. And over that period, they gave him plasma from people who had recovered from the virus. So they were trying to give him antibodies, the same thing you would get if you'd gotten the vaccine, to help him to fight off that virus. The antibodies didn't work. And at the whole time while he was a patient, they were tracking his version. They were actually taking samples and finding out what version of the SARS-CoV-2 did he have. And over time, it branched into lots of different mutants. And by the end, when he died 101 days later, he had a dominant species that had taken over all the others. And it had like 12 different mutations in the spike protein. So in other words, he was a breeding ground for extremely rapid evolution of the virus into a different form that was specifically adjusted to avoid matching to those antibodies that he was being exposed to. Those things started happening after he got the plasma from the antibodies. All of a sudden, he started getting all these variants. So it was very clear from just that one case study that when you have antibodies that you can't use because your immune system is weak, this gives the virus a tremendous opportunity to get up close and personal to the antibodies and figure out how to mutate in order to get around them. And these RNA viruses are very good at mutating. And we're just going to have, you know, we're not going to be able to keep up with the system. You know, if you picture the vaccine, in the future, people were saying for a while, oh, don't get it boosted yet. Wait until we've got a specific vaccine for the Omicron variant, you know, because that one's dominating now. We had the Delta, now we have the Omicron. So by the time they get together and have an offer or something for Omicron, we're going to be moving on already to something else. That's what I think is going to happen. It's going to be a complete moving target where you're getting vaccinated against something that's already obsolete by the time you get the new variant. Version out.
Dr. Geert Vanden Bosch said to us, he talked about, you know, vaccinating during an epidemic, particularly with this technology, is causing a breeding ground for more variants.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's happening.
But what you're saying is that this one particular case study, it caused a worse variant in that person. Isn't the nature of viruses that they weaken over time? Are we saying that what we're actually doing with vaccinating is making it worse?
Well, this is very worrisome, isn't it? And I don't know the answer to that. I would love to know. My hope is, and actually I sometimes tell people that the one benefit that I see from these vaccines is Omicron, because Omicron is a natural vaccine, really. It's become wildly dominant, extremely contagious. So, you know, just flies through the community. You can't stop it. But it's basically vaccinating everybody because they're getting very nice antibodies, and those antibodies are going to work against other variants. When you get the disease, you've got a much broader antibody base because it's not just the spike protein. The virus makes all these different proteins, and the internal proteins are actually quite stable. The virus tends to mutate those proteins that are on its coat, but the ones inside the virus are quite stable. Like even in coronaviruses from colds and stuff, you can get antibodies to the SARS-CoV-2 from a cold that's actually beneficial for those internal antibodies, internal proteins that are very stable. But the vaccine doesn't have any of those proteins in it. And even it's not just antibody response. The virus induces a T-cell memory response, which is very, very interesting. That actually allows the T-cells to immediately recognize another coronavirus, even a different strain of coronavirus, and say, oh, I've seen this before, and I'm ready to go, and I'm going to get those B-cells really busy making antibodies right away. So it'll hasten the pace at which it can produce new antibodies that actually match the new variant to the spike protein. It's the T cells that are adapted to the disease, but not to the vaccine. The vaccine doesn't do that. It only gets the B cells specific antibodies to the specific version of the spike protein that is disappearing from the society. So it's, you know, the vaccines are becoming, of course, the antibodies also fade very, very quickly in the vaccine, much more quickly than the antibodies from the disease. The people have compared, you know, having caught the disease versus having gotten the vaccine, and you just have much, much better protection a year later from the disease than you do from the vaccine for many different reasons.
Do we know how long the antibodies are actually lasting for those who've had the disease, particularly even the alpha strain?
Well, even going back to 2003, when they had the SARS-CoV-1, people who caught that, who were exposed to that, they found out that they still have antibodies that are effective against SARS-CoV-2 18 years later.
Aaron Cariotti, who was a professor at UC Irvine, told me the same thing, and he's been fighting in the courts for about natural immunity because he's had the disease and has the antibodies now. So he actually spoke about the same thing, and there's evidence to suggest that 17 years later, people are still carrying antibodies.
Right. Yes. And that's the beauty of the disease versus the vaccine. The vaccine is way too specific, and it's specific to something that is very vulnerable to change. And that the virus is just going to be happy to, the virus is going to get to see those antibodies. It knows how to mutate. You know, it just keeps on trying different things, and the ones that work well stick around. Very rapid evolution into some new variant that, if it happens to also be very, very infectious, it'll dominate, and it'll chase out all those bad guys. I mean, the cool thing about Omicron is that it's both very contagious and less damaging. It doesn't have, it even apparently doesn't have this loss of sense of smell, is what I've heard. And that's really good news, because that's a super indicator that it's getting into nerve fibers and causing damage, you know, that loss of sense of smell. And that's showing up with the vaccine as well, by the way. There's lots and lots of, I think it's 99.5% of the cases in that 2021 timeframe a loss of sense of smell are COVID-19 vaccines. 0.5% is all the other vaccines put together. It's extremely strong signal. So if the vaccine is causing the same thing that the virus causes, because the spike protein is getting into the brain.
I want to ask you, Dr. Senna, Fauci is talking about a vaccine that's going to be, you know, a solution against all future variants, all future flus, and I don't know whatever other fantasy world they're living in.
Messenger RNA technology can do that for us? Is that what he was saying? Do you know?
Oh, yes. It will be mRNA technology.
The messenger, because they're talking about packaging up both the flu and the and SARS-CoV-2 in the same vaccine, just throwing different kinds of messenger RNAs in there. And they're also talking about, just like they do with the HIV, I've studied the HIV vaccine, and that's one where they initially had three different variants of HIV. And that one is also very not a natural vaccine. It's quite strange how they make that. But they end up putting three different, originally they put three different strains of HIV, of the, HPV. HPV.
HPV.
Not HIV.
Hmm.
HPV. Wait a minute, that's not right. HPV, Gardasil,
yes.
Which has been, they've been giving that to the girls. It's really not a good idea, in my opinion, but that's another story. That one had three, and then they found that all the, there's like over 100 different strains of HPV, and so they picked the three dominant strains, and okay, fine, you get those disappear, they become much, you know, weaker because they can't fight against the vaccine, but then the other strains become dominant in your body, and some of them are more virulent than the original ones. So then they had to introduce the Gardasil 9, where they put nine different strains in there, you know, nine different versions of that HPV into the Gardasil, the boosted up Gardasil. So I'm imagining they're going to roll out something that's got like 15, 20 different RNA sequences that match different kinds of spike proteins from all these different variants of COVID or of the flu for that matter, right? They could package up all these RNAs in there, in order to get you to be exposed to a much greater spread of different strains, and therefore they're hoping that would give you a more general immunity. I don't know how the body's going to react to having all those different versions of these proteins being produced at one time altogether. That sounds pretty horrendous to me. I don't think the mRNA technology is going to survive. I'm very hopeful that the information will finally come out that this stuff is just too toxic and you can't use it. That's what I'm hoping. I know that I feel like that this whole pandemic is almost all about an opportunity to release this messenger RNA technology, because they've been very, very excited about it. The industry, pharmaceutical industry, they have, you know, they've had struggles with their other stuff because they can't seem to come up with exciting new drugs, you know, like the statin drugs, this kind of thing, or some kind of lowering blood pressure drugs or anything. They can't really come up with much of anything other than kind of Me Too drugs, you know, to try to get out of the patents and things like that. It's very boring. They're not having a whole lot of success. The antibodies are totally failing. You know, they've got now multiple antibiotic resistant microbes, pathogens that people can't fight off. They end up dying. They go into the hospital for appendicitis and they die of Pseudomonas aeruginosa because they got picked up a, you know, some kind of strain that's in the hospital. They can't fight it off because the antibodies aren't working. So they're kind of, pharma's in a bind right now, but I think they believe this mRNA technology is going to be fantastic and they're going to be able to cure cancer, or at least treat cancer and treat autoimmune disease. They have a lot of ideas, or even genetic, you know, disorders. They believe that the technology is very, very exciting and very promising. I fear that they're going to find that you can't get past the toxicity. That's what I'm expecting.
I want to ask you, Dr. Senef, because there's been a lot of talk about vaccine-induced autoimmunodeficiency disorder. Autoimmune, you know what I'm talking about. VAIDS.
Right, right. Vaccine AIDS, yeah.
Yeah,
autoimmune
vaccine,
deficiency.
Yes, autoimmune deficiency syndrome. That's the word I'm looking for. So what do we know about that? Because we're also seeing a trend in the decline of the immune systems of people who've had one or two or even three doses, more so worse. The more doses you have, the worse it gets. What do we know about the validity of VAIDS?
Well, that's another one I've been looking into, and I think you might be aware that there's another paper that I've collaborated with Peter McCullough and two other authors on a paper that's still preprint. It's under review, but it hasn't been through the review process yet. And that paper, that was a wild ride. We really learned a lot about some very interesting things going on in biology. I love to learn about biology, and these vaccines are helping me to do that. But one thing that we realized when we researched the literature, and I had a hint of that when I wrote the first paper, is that the vaccines are causing a very different immune response from what the virus causes. And in particular, the vaccines are disrupting what's called the type 1 interferon response. And the type 1 interferon response is a very early response to any kind of invasion from any kind of pathogen, you know, so bacteria, viruses, even cancers. Type 1 interferon is a very important response to cancer, to keep cancer under control. And there was a really interesting paper published by some people from India where they took some human cells in culture and they gave them, you know, a vector that would allow them to make the spike protein, sort of simulating the vaccine. These cells made the spike protein and they packaged it up in exosomes and released them, just as I would expect. And then those exosomes also contained things called microRNAs. And there were two in particular that they found were important and were expressed and were damaging. And they were called microRNA 148A and microRNA 590, those two. These microRNAs are fascinating all by themselves. There's like over 1,000 different ones in the body. And they're kind of a high-level control mechanism for cell policy. As far as what they can do is go in and suppress certain proteins, but very specifically suppress certain proteins, the production of certain proteins. And so these two microRNAs are known to suppress two proteins that are involved with this type 1 interferon response. So they basically shut it down. And when you don't have that response, you then have, you know, you get things like shingles, you have herpes, cold sores. People are getting those things happening after the vaccine. Various latent viruses are becoming activated. And then probably also like hepatitis, you know, various kinds of conditions that are caused by infections of various sorts are going to become more common because of this impaired type 1 interferon response that the vaccine is inducing. And they showed actually that they showed in that same study, they showed that the immune cells of the brain called microglia actually take up those exosomes that are produced by those other cells, and it causes them to launch an inflammatory response, which is going to damage the brain.
This is similar body's response. Is this a similar response from the body that we would expect to see in someone who has AIDS?
Yeah, well, I think so. Weakened innate immunity is what AIDS is. So it's a disruption of the, the B cells? I forget which cells it is in the immune system that the AIDS virus disables, but there's some critical cells in the immune system that the AIDS virus disables. And I don't know if the vaccine specifically disables those cells. It could very well be the case. I know that the type 1 interferon response promotes. So basically, there's these innate cells in the bone marrow that have not yet matured into a particular type of immune cell, and they can mature into lots of different things. You know, those are the stem cells. And without the type 1 interferon response, the T cells don't build up the way they should following an infection, or in fact in response to cancer. So they become unable to control the infection because they're not being produced. You know, their production is triggered by that type 1 interferon response, which is not happening.
Do we know how much of an issue this is going to be for people's immune systems? Do we have a percentage of how much
immune systems? <don't. laughs> This is what I'm wondering. I'm just waiting and seeing. I keep on looking to see what's happening because I don't know everything. Every day is a new chance to find out something new about what's happening. It's been quite a story to live and to experience every day. I am watching too. Of course, you probably are aware of this sort of antibody-dependent enhancement that so I forget who it is that's been talking about the dangers and the possibilities. Is that Dirk van den Bosch? I'm not sure. Of antibody-dependent enhancement, where the antibodies actually backfire. And that's also very worrisome. And I think that makes a lot of sense that that could happen. It certainly has happened in the past when they tried to develop coronavirus vaccines in particular. They ran into trouble with that, where the vaccine does produce antibodies. And it actually produces two kinds of antibodies. It's quite interesting. There's a kind that suppresses, and then there's this other kind that actually enhances the viral response. And the ones that suppress apparently fade more quickly than the ones that enhance. So they're kind of having a race against time. And then they have a crossover point where the enhancing ones are more prevalent than the suppressing ones. And the enhancing ones actually bind to the spike protein and bind to, they could bind to the platelets, and it could cause clots, blood clots, because there's these Fc receptors in the platelets that the antibody facilitates the attachment of the spike protein to the platelets, or even facilitates the uptake of the virus into the immune cell. So that's how the virus can get into immune cells, through these antibodies. Yeah, they can it can infect the immune cells and actually multiply there. And so I'm anticipating that we're going to see a crossover point where the unvaccinated are less susceptible to COVID than the vaccinated who've been vaccinated months before. You know, once the antibodies fade. The vaccine, once you're on the vaccine treadmill, you know, you have to keep on getting those booster shots every 3 or 4 months, it looks like, because the boosters are apparently fading fast as well, maybe faster than the original vaccine.
Do you think
so
that
people are talking
will...
about three shots every year or something like that?
But do you think that people's immune systems are going to become dependent on these constant boosters?
That's what I suspect, and also they're going to get destroyed by the constant boosters. I think we're going to have a very poor capability of fighting off infections and cancer in the future. That's what I'm guessing. And of course, also I expect all these neurodegenerative diseases. Those things take a lot of time. And I will tell you, there's a new paper out, unpeer-reviewed, a preprint paper. Montagnier is one of the authors on it. Montagnier is the French man who won the Nobel Prize for his work on HIV, and he's been fighting these vaccines very aggressively. Unfortunately, he died within the last couple of weeks. I'm very sad to hear that. He's a friend of mine, and he's an author on this paper with two other people, and it's extremely disturbing to me because they found 16 cases in Europe of CJD, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That's the human version of mad cow, the one that infected the cows. It's a horrible disease, which you lose everything. You lose your mind, you lose your ability to move very quickly, and very accelerated rate, to the point where you die very soon after you're diagnosed with it. And there were 16 cases who were diagnosed with it, that all of them shortly after the second shot. And all of, and there were 16, six of them had died by 3 months. Another six had died by 8 months, and the remaining four were still alive at the time the paper was written, but in really, really bad shape.
Dr. Seneff, what we've seen is just devastating effects from these so-called vaccines, and what's literally been a destruction of our immune systems, of humanity across the globe. It's affected people's jobs, lives, you know, not being able to work, make an income unless you go and get an experimental injection, which is clearly causing harm. What would your message be to the world right now, considering all of the data that we've got that proves that these are ineffective and unsafe?
Yes, so of course, you know what my answer is. And I've never been in favor of these vaccines from the get-go. And the more I see them, the more worried I get. And I'm absolutely terrified of the possibility of allowing, you know, children younger than five to get these vaccines. And they're working on that right now. It's just really amazing to me that they could possibly think that would be a good idea. And I'm hoping that these trials, they've had to delay the trials here in the United States and for mysterious reasons. We're not sure whether that some kind of damage is showing up. I'm hoping it is, because if we can just damage those few kids who are in the trials and not get it out, if they start making these vaccines mandatory to attend school, God help us all. I think we're going to have a hard trouble. The next generation is going to have a hard problem with even being able to produce kids. I mean, I think it could really mess up their ability to reproduce. And of course, many, many other problems. The autism rates are going to go up very quickly, I suspect. Now, I don't know. I'm not clairvoyant. It just seems to me a tremendous risk to try to think about. And of course, the child's immune system is underdeveloped. These kids still have a thymus gland, and I'm expecting it to go into the thymus gland, which is the control center for the development and maturation of the immune system in the child. You know, that gland is very, very important for kids to help mature their immune system. And if that's getting inflamed and damaged by these vaccines, I think they're going to have a really, really difficult time with the poor immune response.
You just mentioned autism. The CDC recently just released a new developmental delay that they were expecting for the speech of children. Do you think that this may be related?
I absolutely do. It's very interesting that that's happening right now. But the speech, I think the children have been getting worse and worse over the past 20 years with this autism going on. All the kids, not just the autistic kids, are being affected. The IQ is dropping. And this generation does not have as high an IQ as previous generations had. It's really worrisome that we're harming the brains of our next generation, because that's the future. I mean, if the kids are not healthy, how are we ever going to continue to maintain a healthy culture? I just think it's mind-boggling that they would think this is okay to do, especially to add these COVID-19 vaccines to a schedule that's already, in my opinion, too many vaccines too quickly in those children.
Dr. Stephanie Seneff, we appreciate all your research and all your work. Can you please let people know where they can find you, where they can, you know, read your papers, read your material?
Yes, I have a personal webpage, stephanieseneff.net. And there's a lot of material there, including the pointers to where you can buy my book. Hopefully you can buy it in Australia. I'm not sure, but there's my book. And I have also my webpage at MIT. You can get to that from the other webpage. It's probably easiest because it's kind of a complicated address. But MIT, I have all kinds of stuff there, including many of my peer-reviewed papers and various presentations, slides, actual slides from presentations. So I've got a lot of material posted on my MIT webpage as well.
Wonderful. I'll include that link in the description below. We thank you so much for your time and all of your effort, Dr. Seneff, really, truly. And please, everyone, share this information. It's absolutely crucial. I mean, we've had an information overload today, but it's all vital when it comes to putting the pieces of the puzzle together and humanity realizing that this needs to stop.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. We'll have you again, Dr. Seneff, for sure.
Thanks. And thank you for what you're doing.
Nominated for a Nobel Prize, Him and his team were also the first in the United States to treat COVID-19 patients in a pre-hospital setting. Apart from that, Dr. Zelenko has also developed his protocol, Z-Stack, which I will put in the description below, and is now talking about Z-Detox, which we will get into. Now, some of what we're going to talk about today is going to be very difficult for people to hear. You've been hearing about what is potentially going to happen to people who have taken this bioweapon, taken these injections, and what's happening with their immune systems. But there is hope ahead for people. But before we get into all of that, Dr. Zelenko, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We definitely appreciate your time. So a lot of what you've been saying for a while now, Dr. Zelenko, is coming out. It's true. The truth is no longer hidden. But I want people to know you recently made a statement where you said that sometimes you have to shock people with the worst of what's actually going on in order to help them to realize just how bad this is before you then give them the solution. And I guess first and foremost, what made you realize what is really going on before we get into what it is?
Well, it started in April of 2020, no, March 2020, when I had developed, with God's help, a effective treatment protocol that, if you jump ahead now 2 years, there are dozens of peer-reviewed studies that corroborated that early intervention in high-risk patients with antiviral and anti-inflammatory approach reduces hospitalization and death by 85%. So we're talking about, let's say, out of 1 million dead Americans, we could have kept 850,000 out of the hospital. So but I was seeing that right away because my patients stopped going to the hospital. And Governor Cuomo, in March of 27, issued an executive order blocking access to my protocol, blocking access to hydroxychloroquine, which was part of the basis upon which I was treating patients. And my patients started dying again. And I said to myself, what's going on here? For the first time in my career, some government entity came in and said, no, I can't prescribe a drug to my patient. I mean, it didn't make sense. Or I can't, or the pharmacy wouldn't even give it out. So that began my red pilling, like they say. And I've discovered throughout the last 2 years, tremendous academic fraud, governmental tyranny, media false propaganda and a false narrative, suppression of and deplatforming of doctors who spoke out against the governmental narrative. And so it was one after another of these realizations. And by now, I basically reverse engineered the worst crime in human history.
Reverse engineered the worst crime in human history. I want to get into what this worst crime in human history is. Dr. Zelenko, you said that COVID-19 is a weapon of murder. Can you explain to us what you mean by that statement?
By the way, no one should believe a word I'm saying. Don't make the same mistake with me as you've done with the government. Blind faith belongs to God. With a human being, you should trust and verify. And everything I'm going to say to you, I'm going to give you specific references. Feel free to look it up and come to your own conclusions. There's a 20-year peer-reviewed paper trail, publication trail, and patent trail that document how COVID-19 is a man-made weapon of mass murder. And let's go through the details. In 1998, Dr. Ralph Barrett of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, funded by the NIH, National Institute of Health, started research on something called cross-species transmissibility. He did research on how to try to take a virus from one species of animal and make it infectious to another species of animal. He published a paper about it in 1998. In 1999, he perfected the technique and published a paper on it, and that was also funded by the NIH. In 2002, Dr. Ralph Barrick got a patent from the United States government on how to take a coronavirus and manipulate its payload to make it destructive to human lung tissue. Then this gain of function research, which is a cynical term because really what it is taking a benign animal virus and converting it into something that could infect human beings and destroy human lung tissue and cause blood clots. So in 2015, this research was already outsourced to China, and Dr. Ralph Barrick and Dr. Zheng Li from Wuhan, funded by the NIH, were able to figure out how to take a bad coronavirus and make it infectious to human beings. So the bomb was complete. In other words, they were able to take a bad coronavirus, which was not a threat to human beings, convert it into now a human pathogen, but that's also not that dangerous. It wasn't killing anyone. But they manipulated its payload to be able to destroy human lung tissue. Now, in March of 2020, when I had thousands of sick patients and there were no treatment recommendations, with God's help, I found a paper, the research, and I came up with a treatment protocol that worked, as I mentioned. Now, what I didn't realize until 3 months ago was that paper, which basically described the use of zinc ionophores and zinc, using zinc to stop the virus from replicating, was published in 2010 and was authored by Dr. Ralph Barrick. So the same monster who created the bomb through over 20 years, funded the United States government, had also in 2010 figured out the antidote to defuse the bomb. And so...
And then suppressed the treatment.
If you want to know why it's being suppressed, you have to look in your own country. New South Wales was incarcerating any doctor that prescribed ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine in the treatment of COVID-19. And they told you why. Because it encourages vaccine
hesitancy.
Right. But let me translate what that actually means to you. It worked. The doctors that had the courage to treat patients properly and in the right time frame with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other drugs were saving the lives of their patients. When the patients got better, they weren't motivated to take the vaccine because they got better without it and probably influenced others not to take it.
Correct.
So Australian doctors who actually did their job and saved their patients' lives were incarcerated for saving people's lives because it was contrary to the agenda and the narrative and of the Australian government, of actually the world governments.
I want to be clear for the audience because a lot of people say COVID-19 has an incredibly high survival rate, over 99%, but your protocol has actually been saving those thousands of lives of those who are actually in a critical condition. So this is once the virus gets into that stage.
Let me explain. I've been through this 100 times. Most people that make noise are just because, I don't want to curse. So I'll just say that the following. That it's true, yeah. The majority of people, COVID is an absolute joke, especially for kids and for healthy adults and so on. The population that is at risk is the older population or those with chronic medical problems. In that subpopulation, the death rate, at least at that time, was 7.5%. So my group had treated 7,000 COVID patients, approximately. And when I say treated, I mean diagnosed with COVID, but only a third of them actually got medication. Because the rest were low risk, and we sent them home with just supportive care, and they all did fine. But the higher risk patients, so how many of that? That's 2,300 patients, basically. I had a 7.5% death rate. So we were expecting 10% would be 230, 7.5. So we were expecting around 200 dead patients, statistically. We had three patients died. So when I say that there was an 84%, 85% reduction in hospitalization and death, I'm talking about in a high-risk population group.
Right. Now, you've spoken about this being three separate agendas, and a lot of people, everything is intertwined, Dr. Zelenko, when it comes to population control, when it comes to surveillance, when it comes to their dreams of transhumanism and changing what your God-given DNA is, your genetic code. It's all intertwined. And the reality is that if these people told us that this vaccine was for the purpose of changing your genes, your DNA, many people would not have run. They would have pushed for early treatment. They would have pushed to access the treatment that doctors like you and others across the globe have been treating people successfully with. And what we have now is people's immune systems that have been completely destroyed. And we'll talk about that. So where COVID maybe was not very dangerous before and had over a 99% survival rate, now we're looking at perhaps a common cold taking out people who've had three or four doses like we're seeing in Israel. So can you talk to us? Sorry, go on.
Why was this a bioweapon made? And why is it that anything that gave hope to people, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, early intervention, why was that vilified when the United States taxpayer paid for the research in 2010 that corroborated that this is an effective approach? Why was it in a coordinated fashion with the help of academic fraud and media false propaganda and political measures that were tyrannical? Why was that allowed to happen? Why were voices of doctors, world experts, Dr. Robert Malone, for example, who actually invented the delivery system, the mRNA vaccine, he was deplatformed when he told people to be cautious and not to take it, it's having horrific side effects. So the creator of this stuff was even deplatformed. So we have to ask ourselves a very simple question. Why is it that anything that gave hope to people suppressed? And actually, what happened? Let's look. Fear was rampant. Isolation from loved ones was recommended. People were dehumanized by wearing a face diaper. And so if anyone has learned anything about psychological warfare, you'll understand that what that does over time, it leads to psychological decompensation or damage to the individual, and that individual becomes very vulnerable, gullible, and easy to manipulate. So the end game has always been to create a false justification for 7 billion people to get inoculated with a liquid that they have no medical need for. And the proof is the following, and everything I'm saying is documented. In 2010, Bill Gates at a TED lecture, anyone just Google Bill Gates, TED lecture, TED 2010, population control. And what Bill Gates said then was the following. The global warming is the biggest threat to the planet. Carbon emissions is the biggest cause of global warming. Human beings are the biggest source of carbon emissions. Therefore, the human population needs to be reduced by 10 to 15%, so over a billion people, and how? Through the use of vaccines. Jump ahead 10 years, and the same Bill Gates in 2020 said 7 billion people must be vaccinated. So I'll ask a rhetorical question. Why would I take a vaccine for my health that's being advocated for and financed by someone who wants to reduce the world population? That's one question. You don't have to answer. 2016, Klaus Schwab, in an interview on a French media platform, said that within 10 years, by 2026, every individual on the planet will be tagged with a digital identifier. What? Forget about what purpose that has, but how do you get 7 billion people to agree to do something willingly?
They wouldn't, Dr. Zelenko, especially if they knew how nefarious this really was.
Well, how about you create a bioweapon, scare the hell out of the whole planet, suppress anything that gives hope, cause mass psychosis, and then offer them a false solution which contains a lot of stuff, which we're going to talk about in a minute. I'm giving you puzzle pieces and then we'll put it together. Let me say it this way. There are 2 patents that I think people need to know about. One patent is from August 31st, 2021 in the United States, which describes technology, high-tech nanotech, that's already in these vaccines. I've challenged people for a year to look into this patent and then contradict me. I'm looking for it. I want to have a debate and so on. But no one has taken me up on the challenge. I'm only called a conspiracy theorist. And when I talk to these people, I see they haven't even read the paper. So that's irrelevant. But there is a patent, a paper that describes 50 pages of complex nanotech that allows for the measurement of biometric data. So your heart rate, your pulse, your respiratory rate, and your temperature. But more importantly, a way to transmit that data with your location to a third party. Well, why would, you don't have to believe me, look in the patent. And then there's another patent, this one I know by heart. It's a Microsoft-owned international patent, WO2020-060606, which describes the linkage on biometric data transmission to cryptocurrency. What? We're getting there. How about the following? Look at the agenda of the World Economic Forum. It's on their website. The first thing is America will no longer be a superpower. The second is a few countries will govern globally. Oh, that's interesting. How do you take the most powerful economy and military in the world and in a span of 10 years make them not a superpower? How about you lock down the country and you steal in the largest theft in history of middle class wealth? What do I mean? 1 million small businesses closed, more than. Because it was dangerous to go to my local grocery store, but it was safe to go to Walmart. It was dangerous to go to my local hardware store to buy a hammer, but I could go to Home Depot. So what happened was small businesses closed. The market share that the bigger corporations had grew, and their valuations grew. How about you increase inflation at a ridiculous rate to devalue your own currency, that even now Saudi Arabia has just announced that it wants to transition to the use of the Chinese digital yuan cryptocurrency as the basis for oil transactions, going away from the US dollar? How about you increase the debt, national debt, to over $30 trillion? But let me give you the kicker. According to the Congressional Budget Office in America, Medicare will begin to go bankrupt in 2026. Wait a minute, 2026? Isn't that the year that Klaus Schwab said that 7 billion people will be tagged with a digital identifier? What? You know, there's a saying, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yes.
Okay, so let's tell you what the crisis is going to be, and then I'm going to put everything together. But we have to look at China first. The CCP, Chinese Communist Party, runs the Chinese Central Bank. The Chinese Central Bank issued a digital cryptocurrency called the digital yuan. After it issued that, it made illegal all other cryptocurrencies. So now the only way to transact in China is to use a government-controlled financial system. Then they linked their social credit score system to the use of cryptocurrency. So now what that means is the following. They don't need gulags anymore. They don't need to put a bullet in people's head. If they don't like what you say, they turn off your ability, literally, to transact, and you can't buy bread for your family. Now, that's a dry run for really what's going to happen. When the world economies begin to collapse due to this orchestrated, controlled collapse in America, remember in 2008, the housing crisis? It started in America. It globalized in a week. What do you think is going to happen to the world economic structure when the Medicare system in America begins to go bankrupt in the context of a $30 trillion debt, inflation, and theft of wealth from the middle class? There will be economic destabilization. And so the people, the World Economic Forum, once I have global governance, is going to have exactly that. How? Through a transition to a one-world global cryptocurrency that is controlled by a few global powers. And in order to participate in that global cryptocurrency, you'll need to be a transmitter of biometric data. So let me explain to you what that means. Let's say you want to buy bread. So you go to your local online, you go to your local store that you shop in, you make an order, take your hand, you scan a scanner, it gets charged to your account, probably some drone delivers your bread 10 minutes later. It sounds cool, except what if I don't want to be a transmitter of biometric data? What if I don't want to be injected and inoculated with this stuff? Well, then I'll be excluded from the system of commerce and finance. I'm sure there'll be a black market, but officially I won't be able to transact. What if the government doesn't like me? That's happened. Well, they can easily shut off my ability to transact and support my family. So what's really happening is a global system of control and slavery. It's happening right in front of our eyes. Now, let's talk about the side effects of these vaccines, the population control component to this. Number one, it causes immediate death in a percentage of people. Number two, it causes chronic illnesses like cancer and autoimmune diseases, which will shorten the lifespan of people. Number three, causes massive rates of miscarriages in pregnant women in the first trimester. And number four, it causes infertility. A very effective population control mechanism. And if you look at the FDA, in October of 2020, they had a presentation internally to their scientists. And it wasn't meant to get out, but someone leaked it. And on slide 16 of that presentation, which is 2 months prior to the rollout, the FDA shows a slide of all the side effects of these vaccines. Death, heart attacks, strokes, myocarditis, miscarriages, infertility, a slew of horrific neurological diseases, and many, many others. Now, if we look now, it's been over a year of data. Look at the VAERS database, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is the United States government's program where doctors and patients or families of patients could file reports describing the side effects that people experience, and the Eurovigilance database, same concept except for Europe, both showed the following, a 100% correlation and agreement with what the FDA said was going to happen 2 months prior to the rollout. And the FDA and the Pfizer documents that were just released from December 2020 to February 2021 showed horrific death and side effect profile consistent with all this. So there's a term for this. When there's 100% correlation, what the FDA has prophetic powers. So let me tell you what it is. It's first degree, premeditated, mass murder, crimes against humanity, and genocide. So what, so far what I have is described to you the population control mechanism, a mechanism of enslavement, and now that's all child's play to really what's going on. And you have to listen to the words of the people that do it. You know, evil has a very interesting property. Hitler wrote Mein Kampf years before he took power. These degenerates tell you what they're going to do in advance before they do it. Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab in interviews both said, these vaccines change who you are. What does that mean? And they say, it's through the editing of your genome that they are able to change who you are. What? So listen to this. That after the human genome was sequenced, we figured out which genes correlate to what traits, what properties, certain functions. And then there was the development of what's called CRISPR-Cas9 technology. What it is a cut and paste mechanism, like you have on your computer. You can highlight a certain text, you can then remove it and or paste something else into it. We literally could do that with the human genetic code.
I want people to understand, Dr. Zelenko, because something like CRISPR could potentially be used for good. A lot of these technologies could potentially be used for good, and they will be introduced as such. But the reality is that that the plan that these people have with this technology is not a good thing. It is not going to be used for good. It's going to be used for evil. I just want to interject there for people, because they'll hear positive things about CRISPR. They'll hear positive things about cutting and pasting your genetic code. Maybe you could eliminate an illness this way.
Yeah, for sure. If you look at Huntington's disease or other genetic diseases, so there's no cure for them. Now we can come out and potentially excise the defective gene and splice in a healthy gene to cure the person. But that's not what it's being used for. What is actually, listen, nuclear technology could also be used for good, right? Doesn't mean Iran should have high power centrifuges. Anyway, so CRISPR-Cas9 technology, I'm trying to explain to people what it is the ability for a human being to select out a piece of genetic code, cut it out, and then splice something else in its place. And there are research and papers that show that mRNA is the perfect delivery mechanism for CRISPR-Cas9 technology. So what these shots actually have in them is the ability to modify the genetic code of a person. And you just have to listen to someone. His name is Yuval Noah Harari. Really, really, really bad guy. He's a professor of history at the university, a Hebrew university in Jerusalem. He's also Obama's favorite author. Obama said that in CNN. He's also Klaus Schwab's spiritual mentor, in a sense. He spoke multiple times at the World Economic Forum in 2018 and 2020. And you have to listen to what he says. Humans are hackable animals. If we can hack into the human genetic code, we can engineer the genetic code with intelligent design, but not some God's intelligent design that lives above the clouds, but our human intelligent design. What the Gestapo and Stalin tried to accomplish, we now have the technology so that some corporations and governments will be able to hack into the human genetic code and modify what it means to be human.
As he actually said, what these former dictators only dreamed of we now have the technology to do it. He said these words.
And Biden is sitting in the crowd, and Kerry and Klaus Schwab looking at this guy like, so let me tell you what the new world order is. It's the oldest world order. It's just rebranding of idolatry, paganism, and child sacrifice. There's nothing new about it. And so there's three unique elements to what these vaccines are actually doing, and none of them have to do with your health in a positive way. Number one, reduce the world population. Number two, enslave anyone who's left. Number three, literally re-engineer what it means to be a human being. Would you give Bill Gates or Klaus Schwab access to your email password or home security system or bank account? Probably not.
Certainly.
Why would we give him access to our genetic code? What does it mean to be made in the image of God? It means that his image is imprinted in the unique code of our genome. So that's the human 1.0 is the God version. Now, if you get modified, so now you're made in the image of Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates. Everything I said could be easily documented with references, and I know it's difficult to process and believe. It was difficult for me also, but it doesn't change the fact that it's true.
Now, I've heard you say before, and a lot of people believe, that these people are godless people. But if we're talking about actually changing, and I've heard Yuval Harari say before as well that the idea of free will doesn't exist anymore, and it's not some god in the sky, it's us, it's human beings. But this plan is so evil and satanic in nature. Can they really be godless, or are they actually worshipping the wrong god?
So this is a repeat of a historic and biblical narrative. This is just the same war, but a different battlefield of the tension that exists between two systems of thought that cannot coexist. One is a divine system that we're made in the image of God, which means that our lives have sanctity. And if our lives have sanctity, we have human rights. And if we have human rights, it's not in any other human being's decision or prerogative of how many of us live on the planet, for how long, and who should be free. It's God's department. Or you can take there's a joke, I'm sure you heard it, that a child goes to his mother, asks, where do we come from? So the mother says, well, we're made in the image of God. And the same child goes to his father, asks the same question. He said, we evolved from monkeys. So he's all confused. So he goes back to his mother and says, well, I don't understand. So the mother says, it's not a contradiction. That's my side of the family, that's his side of the family. But that's the point. Are we made in the image of divine, or are we evolved from monkeys? It has implications. If we have no sanctity, we're nothing different than a cockroach, then whoever is on top of the food chain, by definition, survival of the fittest, has the ability to decide who's on top, who is enslaved, and who should be dead. Sound familiar? Because 80 years ago, that's exactly what the Nazis did. They were descendants of Aryan gods, supposedly, and therefore supermen, like Nietzsche would say, and they were the Ubermenschen. And Anglo-Saxons were just human. Western Europeans needed to be enslaved to serve the superhumans. And the Untermenschen, the subhumans, like I belong to, and the Slavs, gypsies, political prisoners, and handicapped people, were meant to be vaporized into dust. You think that mentality went away? It just resurfaced now, but it's not anti-Semitic. This time around, we're all Jews. The Holocaust is a dry run for what they want to do. And so the truth is the following. If you sum total all these forces that are doing this, you essentially get the primordial serpent. and whatever he represents. And humanity has made choices over a long time that have created a godless society where these forces thrive. What do I mean? Well, we desecrated the sanctity of marriage and gender. We desecrated life itself. We've slaughtered the unborn without impunity. We have normalized debauchery and immorality and teach that to our children. So what do you expect? A world that is going to be blessed by God? And so I think what's happening now is the following. God is giving every single person a choice. And it's a binary choice. And you cannot sit this one out. Because if you choose nothing, that's also a choice. What is the choice? Who are you going to worship? Are you going to worship your creator who makes you anew every instant of time out of love? And all you need to do is ask for the fortitude to deal with the uncertainty and fear of life? Or are you going to let that fear lead you astray to unhealthy cultish codependency on sociopaths and corrupt government? That's the choice.
And it will be a dependency, not just at a spiritual level, not just mentally. It'll also be a dependency at a physical level. And I want to talk to you about antibody-dependent enhancement and how they're going to enslave people through this now. Talk to us about what antibody-dependent enhancement is, Dr. Zelenko.
First of all, it's not me saying it. It's really world-renowned level scientists. Dr. Luc Montagnier, who just passed away, who discovered HIV, got a Nobel Prize in 2008. Dr. Sukharev Bhakti, the top published immunologist in the history of the field. Dr. Geert Vandenbosch, one of the world's top immunologists, said all the following. That immunizing people during an active pandemic, first of all, breeds more dangerous and virulent variants. And also, the risk of antibody-dependent enhancement and the possible genocide associated with that has never been so great. And so what is antibody-dependent enhancement? So we discovered that in the 1960s, when the RSV vaccine was made, was given to children. Children developed antibodies. And then when they were exposed to RSV, actual virus, many died. So why did they die? So when they looked into the root causes, they saw that the antibodies that were produced actually resulted in a pathologic lethal immune reaction. So, you know, there's good antibodies and there's bad antibodies. Like autoimmune diseases, that's based on bad antibodies. I'll give you another, anyone who has children, they can shout to a doctor for a sore throat. If the child is diagnosed with strep throat, which is Streptococcus A, he gets antibiotics. And the question is why? There's also strep B, C, D. We don't treat those because the immune system gets rid of them. So why do we treat strep A? Because we found that the antibodies produced by your immune system against strep A also destroy the hearts of children. Something called rheumatic heart disease. We don't want the immune system to make antibodies against strep A. We'd rather give antibiotics so that doesn't happen to preserve the hearts of children. My point being is there are dangerous antibodies also.
Yes.
Same thing happened with the dengue fever virus vaccine in the 70s, where they gave it to adults, and when exposed to the virus, they died. Same conclusion, antibody-dependent enhancement. Same thing happened with the swine flu vaccines. 1976. They were pulled after 26 people died. And the same thing happened with all the previous attempts to make coronavirus vaccines in animals that in many cases, a large percentage of the animals died when exposed and challenged by the coronavirus. So here's my question. Wouldn't it be a good idea to exclude that phenomenon from the human race before you immunize 7 billion people? So you know that wasn't done, and it was not done because that's actually part of the agenda. So what it actually does, it's interesting, the immune system has two components. There's the humoral immune system, which is the antibody system, the plasma or B-cell immunity, and there's the innate immune system or the T-cell immunity. And they work differently. And so in some ways, the antibodies produced are overreactive, upregulated, and pathologic. From the other end, the innate immune system, the T-cell immunity, is actually destroyed by these vaccines. It destroys your T-cell function, natural killer cell function, and also suppresses tumor suppressor genes. It's like taking the brakes off cancer. And so in the two parts of the immune system, which are different, one is upregulated, the other is downregulated. So it really creates a immune system dysregulation. Or another way of saying it, it's an acquired, because it wasn't there before, so it was acquired, immune deficiency symptom.
AIDS.
So it's a vaccine-induced AIDS. Before, most people, I've done this many times, so most people, AIDS, HIV, he's crazy. I didn't say HIV. HIV is human immunodeficiency virus, true. It actually destroys the immune system and causes a syndrome called AIDS. But that's not the only thing that destroys the immune system and causes a syndrome called AIDS. It turns out there are dozens of peer-reviewed papers that attest to what I'm saying, that these vaccines, especially people, it seems to be dose-related, and had multiple injections, destroy their immune system. That's why the funeral directors in Israel, you won't hear this from the government, are saying that they're overrun, that they're seeing a 10x or 1,000% increase in death, especially in young people, and it's so much so that they don't have the resources to bury everyone properly. And the official narrative is that, well, people are dying from Omicron. Really? Why is it only Israelis that come from Omicron? In South Africa, where it came from, no one died. The doctors were able to treat it. In the United States, no one died. My practice for sure. And there's a reason why. That Omicron, by the way, is much more infectious than even measles. But it doesn't affect the lower airway in most cases. It affects the upper airway, much less dangerous, causes a bad cold or maybe a flu-like syndrome, but it doesn't kill you. Why are Israelis dying from Omicron? And they are, by the way. Well,
because they're highly injected population whose immune systems have now completely been destroyed and they can't handle something as mild as Omicron anymore.
So around 50% of the Israeli population has AIDS. Israel is the number one country in the world that has four shots, three shots. I'm not really sure about two shots, but it's up there, right? So why is the most immunized country in the world experiencing the worst death rates? And why would getting more shots help? You know the definition of insanity, according to Einstein? To just do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result? But this is not insanity. This is choreographed. It's insanity on the from the patient, from the person's perspective, to agree to it. But it's not insanity from the government forces, because it's the whole goal of what they're doing. They're accomplishing exactly what they want to accomplish. And by the way, all those three things are the result of a human being, three things, I mean, population control, slavery, and the changing of the genetic code is the result of a person choosing to be enslaved. In other words, I know it's hard. There's a lot of coercion. There's a lot of social pressure. There's a lot of threats from the government, especially in Australia. I get it. But still, to my knowledge, no one is physically being held down and injected yet. It may be coming, but do you know the difference between your country and my country? Is that we have 450 million guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens. And the government knows. There's 100 million of us. And the government knows. Look, if someone tried to break into my house and rape my wife, I would blow their head off. If someone tried to break into my house and hold down my children and inject them with a poison death liquid, what do you think is going to happen? Think about me. What do you think is going to happen? So the United States government knows this. We'll start a civil war. Anyway, so stop giving up your divine gifts of consciousness and free will. Don't take off the yoke of the divine and put on the yoke of Morrison. Because if you put on the yoke of another human being, population control, slavery, and you're allowing access to your genetic code. So in reality, a person is making a choice. You know, I had so many people, I want to travel on the plane, so I'm going to get vaccinated. Oh, I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to be expelled from school. And I try to explain, listen, I know it's hard. I know your life is being disrupted. But wouldn't you want to sacrifice now, perhaps, so that you maintain a future? Why would I sacrifice my future for some conveniences in the present? Where's your value structure? Like, what's most important to you? Isn't the sanctity of your life more important? But people don't want to hear this. They've been really, I literally could take some people, into a morgue and rub their faces on dead corpses that died within a week of getting injected with this poison death liquid, and it wouldn't make a difference. That's how powerful the mass psychosis and psychological manipulation and successful, how powerful it is. But fortunately, there's a large percentage of humanity that is waking up. And look, they only got 3 billion people.
Yes, way under their target, and they're going to keep pushing, and we know this. And what we have to be aware of is that with the destruction of people's immune systems, those people that are going back for a third, fourth, now fifth, pushing for a fifth dose here in Australia, Dr. Zelenko, will be like Israel very soon. We haven't seen the worst of the effects of these bioweapon, lethal, slow-acting lethal poison, Dr. Ben Marble calls it, yet in Australia, but we will. And the excuse will be a new variant or a new virus that they unleash onto that population, which has already got a destroyed immune system. And I do want to talk about solutions in a minute, but before we talk about what people can do about this, Dr. Zelenko, first and foremost, these people must be held accountable. So you said there is an awakening happening. There are people that are waking up to the truth, but they want justice.
Look, justice is a slippery thing. When you look at the Nuremberg trials and you see the Nazi high command sitting in that box, that was good. But you know who really should have sat in that box? Henry Ford. Why? Because Henry Ford propagated the protocols of the Elders of Zion, fueled global anti-Semitism, and got from Hitler himself, the Nazi Medal of Honor in 1938. How about Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, who funded all the eugenics research from Nazi Germany, and owned IG Farber, which made Zyklon B gas to gas people in concentration camps. How about IBM, who made the punch card system, basically the first computer system, to run the concentration camps? How about GM, that through its subsidiaries in Europe, made 75% of the trucks for the Wehrmacht, the German army? See, those are the people that really belong in that box, but they're going to slither, they're the serpent, they'll get away. They're very powerful, they're very smart, they hide through proxies, and so some low-level fruit will be sacrificed. Fauci, it's already happening. And other people of that stature, and people will forget. Look how easy, you know, there's a joke that Putin cured COVID. Because overnight, no more COVID reporting, and the whole entire global media singing the same narrative, Russia bad, Ukraine good, everyone's looking there. Hey, what about the doom and gloom of the COVID, coronavirus? How about all the isolation and masking and all this fear mongering? What happened? People are like so gullible, they don't learn. They don't learn that the media is nothing more than a tool of the people who have orchestrated this crisis, and they're used as a way to send false information and confuse people. And that's why I do these interviews, because I believe that every single human being has a right to see the full spectrum of knowledge and opinions so that they can make an intelligent choice. Whatever choice you make is on you, but it's how can you make an intelligent, informed choice if the true narrative is being hidden from you?
Should the media be punished?
Yeah, I think that, well, personally, whoever is found guilty of crimes against humanity and genocide should be executed. To act as a deterrent for future despots. So absolutely, and justice, but it fulfills our lust for revenge, but it doesn't really change anything. What really will change the trajectory of where humanity goes is a change within yourself. Carl Jung, the famous psychoanalyst, said that the moral degradation of a society begins with the degradation of the individual. He also said that, well, I don't know if he said it, but you can extrapolate that the moral improvement of a society begins with the improvement of the individual. If we on an individual level choose to reconcile our minds and hearts with our Creator and renounce the worship of the God of science, the God of technology, the God of power, money, lust, fame, whatever, every God but the true God. Listen, we're all descendants from the same family, which is Noah, his wife, and their children, right? Because there was a flood that killed everyone else, right? So all of humanity literally stems from Noah and his family. The reason why I bring that up is that in the Bible, in the Old Testament, there are seven laws that were given to Noah. And once I tell you them, you'll know they're so familiar to you, but it's important to understand their roots and that everyone should consider living by them. Number one, to believe in the one God. Number two, don't worship false gods. Number three, do not steal, do not murder, do not commit adultery. But those are easy, because how can you have a stable society if you don't respect property rights, family boundaries, and life itself? And you can't have a stable society without that. So that's 2, 3, 4, and 5. Number six is to establish courts of justice that are interested in enforcing the rule of law. Well, that makes sense. And number seven, which is an interesting one. You shouldn't eat from the limb of a living animal. In other words, you can eat meat, but don't do it when the animal is alive. Why should you torture the animal? You can extrapolate that through a different kind of concept. Respect God's creation. He made a nice world. He made animals. There's no reason to desecrate it and to torture unnecessarily. So those are the seven laws, which I think resonate in the minds of everyone. I mean, right. To believe in one God, not to worship false gods. Those are good. To have stable society through observing, not stealing, not murdering, not sexual promiscuity, immorality. Set up a system that can enforce the laws and the rule of law and respect God's creation. They're pretty simple. I mean, there's common sense. I think that if humanity would gravitate incrementally, little by little, in that direction, that is a very practical, doable measure that may restore divine favor over the planet. I hope. I don't know for sure, but I'm not God's accountant, but I know the direction we're heading in now is unsustainable.
If they would turn and repent, then I would heal their land. And I think that you're absolutely right, Dr. Zelenko. We've seen a moral decline in society. We've seen eliminating God from our schools, our education systems, our society in general. People being ashamed to talk about their belief in God. Well, you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be ashamed of that. In fact, you should wear it proudly. And no one should be able to steal that part of your identity from you. I'm aware that we're almost at the end of time, of our time together, Dr. Zelenko. So I want to talk about Z-Stack, and I want to talk about Z-Detox and some of what you've got coming in the future before we wrap up, so that people know that there is also a medical solution. Apart from a mass awakening, there is also something in the works to help them with the destruction of their immune systems if they have received these injections.
Yeah, so... the protocols that were created with the use of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin showed a massive 85% recovery rate and keeping people out of the hospital. But those are, in your country and in many places in the world and in many places in America, you can't get them.
Mm.
So it doesn't help you.
Mm.
So I found some alternatives that are over-the-counter, that are considered zinc delivery systems. So there's one that's called quercetin. And so in response to Cuomo banning the access to hydroxychloroquine, I did more research and I found in the NIH server peer-reviewed papers that quercetin does the same thing as the hydroxychloroquine. And I didn't even know what it was, so I Googled it. I see that it's a derivative of onions and apple peels. More importantly, it's available over the counter without a prescription. And I remember the moment I said, oh my God, I just found the cure to tyranny. Because now I could say, listen, go to the vitamin shop, get quercetin, vitamin C, D, and zinc, use it in the right way, and you'll be fine. And I open sourced that information. I pumped it all over the place. And the most common result or comment I got, we can't find it all in one place. And even if we do, there's so many options. People couldn't put the puzzle pieces together in the right time frame. And timing is everything because you have to treat this thing early. So I was asked to put it all together in one pill and make it convenient. So that's how Z-Stack was born. It was born out of necessity. And it was really working. It works really well. However, a few months later, I found something else. It was called EGCG, which is an extract of green tea. And it's much more powerful than quercetin. Think of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin as a 50 caliber machine gun. Quercetin, 22 caliber pistol. Okay, listen, if I have nothing else, I'll take it, right? But think of EGCG as a 308 sniper rifle. Much better.
Okay.
And so because of the vaccines causing blood clots and the risk of antibody-dependent enhancement and immune system dysregulation, the people that are vaccinated are really at high risk. By the way, I have some good news that in around 3 years, there will be technology developed and available for use that will cause a great reset in your immune system, literally reboot the immune system. And it's coming, but it's going to be like 3 years. So we need a bridge until then.
Yep.
And so Z-Detox